Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It's Friday, October 3rd. It's the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host again, filling in for Alex today. Paul Joseph Watson with you for the full 3 hours. We've got David Knight back in studio coming up in the last hour. In the second hour, we're going to go to an interview with Syrian girl who's going to talk about ISIS, the airstrikes, questioning are they actually having an effect on killing ISIS members. It appears that the opposite is the case. ISIS is advancing. We're also going to talk about Gamergate, which is this basically huge open conspiracy within the video games industry where social engineers and feminists have infiltrated video game making companies and the video game media to implant messages of social engineering. It's kind of a topic that's bubbled under the surface a little bit over the past month, but we're going to get into it with Syrian Girl. We've also got a tribute to Stan Monteith coming up at the bottom of the hour, so be sure to stay tuned for that. The latest news surrounding Ebola, of course, the CDC's response goes from concerning to downright alarming. We've got a top story on Infowars.com right now. Ebola patients' family under armed quarantine. This just came out around about 30 minutes ago out of the Associated Press originally. Basically, the family of the Ebola patient in Dallas tried to escape the apartment in which they're being quarantined, obviously because of their exposure, potential exposure to the Ebola virus. So we've got that story up on Infowars.com. Coming up now after the break, we're going to play this clip from Anderson Cooper. And this is just, again, astounding. He interviews the partner of the Ebola victim, who's still obviously holed up there in the apartment in Dallas. And she basically tells him, the CDC gave them no advice, no information whatsoever on how to deal with the vomit, diarrhea, sweat-stained Ebola bed sheets of this Ebola victim who had been staying in that apartment, of course, for days after he had contracted the virus. So we've got that clip coming up. Again, absolute incompetence on behalf of the CDC. It goes from bad to worse. There's a CNN story. Frustrated woman quarantined with sheets, towels soiled by Ebola patient. We've got that clip coming up after the break from CNN. You've got to see this. Also, out of Breitbart today, co-workers of US Ebola patient, he knew he had Ebola, he was desperate to survive. Now, a couple of days ago, I made the comment that this guy could have been an Ebola tourist. He could have been coming to the US specifically to get treatment in the knowledge that he wouldn't get such treatment in Africa, of course, where they're completely overwhelmed with the spread of Ebola, well over 3,000 people dead now as a result of this outbreak. The hospitals cannot take any more patients. We've seen videos of people dying on the street. So now the boss of this Ebola victim who came into Dallas is basically saying, quote, if he were in Liberia, he was going to surely die, saying he was glad that Duncan was in a country with adequate medical resources. So he's basically making the point that in a, quote, desperate attempt to survive, the Ebola victim, Thomas Eric Duncan, came into Dallas deliberately to get treatment that he knew he wouldn't get back in Liberia. Also, shocking story that I put out last night. Shock image shows unprotected workers cleaning up Ebola vomit in Dallas. Now, this is a shot, an image out of a HD Chopper 8 crew from WFAA. And this shows the workers cleaning up the sidewalk outside the apartment where the Ebola victim stayed, where he vomited on the sidewalk. Now, it's not clear whether they're actually cleaning up the Ebola vomit, but they're in the area, they're cleaning the sidewalk where this patient stumbled and fell before he got into the ambulance and was taken to the Texas Presbyterian Hospital. So, obviously, no protection whatsoever. And we're going to delve more into that, more into CDC incompetence with this Ebola situation after the break. The news is all circulating around this apartment where the family members are currently quarantined. Syrian Girl coming up second hour, David Knight third hour. We've also got news on the economy, the 5.9% unemployment rate. What they're not telling you about that. It's the Alex Jones Show live. Stay tuned, Infowars.com.
Yeah. crashing through the lies and disinformation. It's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
On the Friday edition of the Alex Jones Show. Big story just posted up on the top left-hand side of the Drudge Report. Patient with Ebola-like symptoms being treated at Howard University Hospital in D.C. So again, of course, yesterday and the day before we had potential cases in Hawaii and Utah. They turned out to be negative, but now they're saying patient with Ebola-like symptoms is being treated at Howard University Hospital in D.C. A hospital spokesperson confirmed late Friday morning the patient had travelled to Nigeria recently. That person has been admitted to the hospital in stable condition and is being isolated and tested. The medical team is working with the CDC to determine whether the patient has Ebola. So another potential case there. We've seen others turn out to be negative. Hopefully that's the case again. But we've also received reports, calls to other shows, and I saw this story out a couple of days ago, again unconfirmed, but that people in Dallas are receiving phone calls from health authorities, whether that be the CDC or emergency managers, who were living in the immediate area surrounding the apartment where the Ebola victim lived, and they're being told to either stay indoors or are being given advice on how to spot potential symptoms of Ebola and how to protect themselves. So again, that's unconfirmed, but later we'll take calls. Hopefully people from Dallas can call in and tell us if they've had any information on that, if they've received any such calls. I know a couple of days ago there were reports of robocalls coming in from the CDC to residents in Dallas warning them about precautions to take regarding Ebola, so we'll continue to track that. Now, this apartment, which the news seems to be centering around today, where the Ebola victim stayed right before he was taken to hospital after obviously having been sent back home from hospital 2 days prior, having been given antibiotics. Article up on Infowars.com right now from Mikhail Thalen here. Sheriff's officers fearful after being ordered into quarantined Ebola apartment. Five employees with the Dallas County Sheriff's Department entered the quarantined apartment of Ebola patient Thomas Eric Duncan Wednesday night after being ordered to bring his four family members a court order barring them from leaving their home. The five, who were ordered to enter the residence by Sheriff Lupe Valdez, were joined by a doctor and the head of the Dallas County Health and Human Services Department. The incident was learned after the sheriff's deputies noticed the squad cars used by the five being taken out of service unexpectedly the following morning. And we can get into this further, actually, in a separate article. Here's the quote, actually. This is from Sheriff's Association President Christopher Dyer, who said the sheriff's members were uneasy at best, having been told to enter this potentially Ebola-infected apartment. My concern is for the deputies and their families, said Dyer, and I want to see Dallas County do everything that they can to alleviate their concerns. My anger is really with the feds, Dreyer said. Let's move that family. Let's move everybody out of that building. I don't care if it's overkill. Let's do overkill. I don't think sending a few deputies in there is the right course of action. Then if you look at this tweet from Scott Gordon out of NBC5 here, four sheriff's deputies, health director, doctor, went into Ebola victim's apartment without protection last night, Sheriff's Association says. And then I actually have an image here on the desk of three individuals waiting to enter the potentially Ebola-infected apartment, obviously wearing no protection whatsoever. It's not clear whether these are involved with the law enforcement authorities that entered that apartment, but again, it shows you the complete lack of protection that's being taken, given the knowledge that this Ebola sufferer was in that apartment for a matter of days. We're going to go to this Anderson Cooper clip now, which is an interview with the partner of the Ebola victim. Just listen to what the CDC told her, or what they didn't tell her, about how to deal with the bedsheets, with the towels that this Ebola victim had used before he was taken to hospital. Let's go to the clip.
So that was the first time they mentioned to you Ebola?
Yes.
When you heard that, what did you think?
I was so scary.
When you were caring for him, did you get in contact with any fluids?
Not I know of.
Did the CDC recommend that you clean your apartment?
I told them, I said my daughter brought me some Clorox, and we sprayed the Clorox on the mattresses on my bed, and I tied and dirty clothes on in a plastic bag, all sealed up, and that's it. But they said I shouldn't throw anything away until they can get back with me.
So the sheets that Thomas used and the towels that he used, what have you done with those?
They are in a plastic bag.
In your apartment?
Uh-huh.
So you put you took them off the bed and put them into a plastic bag?
No, only the towel is in a plastic bag, but the rest of the stuff stays the same on the bed. The bed sheets, everything is on the bed.
So the sheets that he used, that he slept on, that's still on the bed?
Yeah.
How are you coping with this?
I'm just hanging in there, depending on God to save our lives.
Depending on God to save your lives.
Yeah. At the time come, let us be free, because people are telling lies.
So you feel like people are not informed about how you actually get Ebola. You actually have to come in contact with the body fluids of somebody who is not only infected, but actually sick with Ebola.
Yeah, and we are not sick with Ebola.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, even if you had Ebola, you're not showing any signs, so you would not be able to infect anybody else. And you want to get that message across.
Yes. Then to leave me alone, leave my kids alone.
Okay. That was Anderson Cooper last night interviewing the partner of the Ebola victim who stayed there in the Dallas apartment. She's calling for them to leave her kids alone. They actually, it appears this morning, tried to escape from the apartment, and now they're under armed guard. But of course, the key thing to come out of that clip was the CDC basically gave them no advice whatsoever on how to deal with these diarrhea, sweat, potentially blood, vomit, stained Ebola bed sheets, as well as the towels that were being used by this Ebola victim in the days before he was taken to hospital. And they're letting people into this apartment with no protection whatsoever. If you go back to the document cam, this is an image, and it was in a Daily Mail article, of individuals being let into this apartment, obviously not even wearing face masks, never mind any kind of biosuits, which is interesting because, as we'll get onto shortly, the hazmat teams, which cleaned the apartment last night, and there are conflicting reports on this, CNN reported this morning that they hadn't actually cleaned the apartment yet, but Breitbart is citing another source which says that the hazmat teams went in there last night to clean the apartment. They were wearing full biosuits, and yet here's the image of them being let into the apartment. Other individuals, there's the article out of Breitbart. If you scroll down, it says that they're wearing full bio suits. The quote is, all employees entering the apartment unit will be fully dressed in bio suits. And then you switch back to the article last night, which is up on Infowars.com. This is the cleaning crew that arrived at the Dallas apartment yesterday, I believe, to clean the sidewalk where the Ebola victim had spilled out of his apartment before getting into the ambulance to go to the Dallas hospital. An eyewitness told NBC News that the Ebola victim had vomited on the sidewalk. And yet there are these two guys wearing not even face masks, pressure washing the Ebola sick from the sidewalk with no protective suits whatsoever, and obviously potentially putting at risk the other people who live around that apartment in that apartment block. Absolutely amazing. We've also got a story here again out of Infowars.com by Steve Watson. Dallas paramedic slams health officials, was not informed of Ebola diagnosis, drove contaminated ambulance for 2 days. So this is one of the individuals who picked up the Ebola victim in the ambulance, which again was used for a period of 2 days afterwards. He's saying reports of officials tracking those potentially contaminated are, quote, bull crap. Paramedics who attended to the Ebola-diagnosed patient in Dallas were not contacted by hospital officials, local or state health officials, or the CDC to inform them that they were driving around in an ambulance that could be contaminated with the infectious virus. And again, we have the quotes here. None of them have been contacted. None of the paramedics that were on that shift and went in the ambulance were contacted. I've been off 3 days now. No one contacted me, and I was in and drove that ambulance after it was infected. This was one of the guys who actually drove the ambulance. This is definitely a concern, and exposed workers have not been contacted or tested. I had to call into control in Dallas at 8 p.m. and complain to get evaluated. 3 days after the fact, I had to demand exposure testing, and they are reporting following up with all the people in the ambulance. Bullcrap. They haven't even followed up with the 10 firefighters that were on duty Sunday. So what on earth is the CDC doing? They're not even informing the people within the Ebola-infected apartment on how to take proper precautions to clean it. It took them days to send out cleaners to clean the surrounding area of the apartment. They were wearing no protection whatsoever. Finally, according to some reports, the hazmat teams went in there last night. But again, they're letting people into this apartment block with no protection whatsoever. And now it appears that this Ebola victim deliberately travelled to the United States in order to get treatment. Now you see the article out of WFAA with the sheriffs complaining. They entered the quarantined apartment by order. Now they're on leave. They're complaining basically that they were put in harm's way with no protection whatsoever. Amazing incompetence on behalf of the CDC. We'll cover it more after the break. We've got Syrian girl coming up in the second hour to talk about ISIS. We're going to talk about the jobs figures as well, but they're not telling you about that. This is The Alex Jones Show Live. We'll be right back. Infowars.com.
Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like no bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal.
We're back live on The Alex Jones Show. Coming up in the next segment, you've got a tribute to Stan Monteith, of course, who sadly passed away a few days ago, so we've got that coming up. Currently focusing on the latest Ebola news, we've got this story again out of Infowars.com. Texas health officials have yet to clean Ebola patients' home despite protocol. Now, this was yesterday afternoon. So we called the CDC yesterday afternoon and said, why hasn't the potentially Ebola-infected apartment been cleaned? The CDC told us, an official told us, that it should have absolutely have been cleaned, and yet, according to reports on CNN this morning, it still hasn't been cleaned. Breitbart is saying that hazmat teams cleaned it last night, so that still remains up in the air. Now you see the article out of Infowars.com. And yet the CDC, in all its wisdom, is not blocking flights. They refuse to block any flights coming in from West Africa. The screening measures in the airports, they see CDC argues against shutting down air travel from Africa to stop Ebola. They've refused to take that direct action. The screening measures in the airports are completely useless, basically. There's an article out today which argues that Ebola sufferers who take ibuprofen could fool these temperature detectors there in the airports. So, I mean, they've not only dropped the ball, they've put a lot of people at risk. And the question is, who's going to be fired? People within the CDC need to be fired for this. This guy was allowed to walk around for days afterwards. The response from the CDC has been alarming, absolutely alarming. You would think they would take all measures to get this under control. Yet, you know, they send two guys with caps, with not even face masks, to pressure wash Ebola vomit off the pavement outside of the apartment. They're letting sheriff's deputies into the apartment, obviously against their will, to take a court order, to hand a court order to the family. The family are now trying to escape the apartment. They've got them under armed guard. And we don't even know if it's been cleaned or not, if it's been sanitized, as, you know, whether the surrounding area has been sanitized. Absolute incompetence on every single level. And somebody needs to be fired. Here we see out of Breitbart, hazmat team arrives to decontaminate Dallas Ebola apartment. Now, unlike the vomit cleaning crew yesterday who pressure washed the sidewalk with no protection whatsoever, this article says all employees entering the apartment will be fully dressed in bio suits. So why wasn't that same advice given to the sheriff's deputies who were forced to enter the Ebola apartment yesterday? Why wasn't it given to the original cleaning crews that cleaned up the sidewalk? They see sheriff's officers fearful after being ordered into quarantined Ebola apartment. They've now been placed on leave. This is not just a failure to communicate. This is completely ridiculous, and people's jobs need to be put on the line for this. I mean, look at that ridiculous image that came out of WFAA yesterday. We have this out of the London Independent, treating it somewhat more seriously. Ebola virus pandemic should be treated the same way as threat posed by nuclear weapons, security officials say. This is out of the Independent. The Ebola virus spreading exponentially across Africa and killing thousands of people will get worse, the government has admitted, amid calls for the full involvement of the international military to contain the disease. The statement from European Leadership Network, signed by five former UK defence secretaries, stated that Ebola was clearly outstripping the ability of healthcare systems and workers to respond. So they're calling for an international military response to the crisis. And yet the CDC is letting two guys with a pressure washer handle the Ebola vomit on the sidewalk. It's completely ridiculous. We have this article posted up on prisonplanet.com today. There are only 19 level 4 biocontainment beds in the whole of the United States and 4 in the UK. The UK is well set for an Ebola outbreak. We have 2. Yes, that's right. 2 isolation units. And one is getting redeveloped. So if Ebola hits the UK, they have 1 isolation unit that could properly contain 1 Ebola patient. The United States has 19 level 4 biocontainment beds for 317 million people. So Lizzie Bennett of the Underground Medic comments, I think we just found out why the government are underplaying the situation. They simply do not have the facilities to cope with even a small outbreak. So it seems that the preparations in the UK and the United States are just as bad as the situation in Africa, where they're completely overwhelmed. It really seems like we're not prepared for this, and it's becoming very alarming, the incompetent response from the CDC. We'll be back after the break with our tribute to Stan Monteith. Syrian Girl coming up in the second hour, David Knight third hour. Infowars.com. Stay right there.
We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
It's Paul Joseph Watson filling in for Alex Jones. It's a live Friday edition of the Alex Jones Show. Quick news update here before we go to the Stan Monteith clip. Toronto Hospital testing patient for possible case of Ebola. Patient at a Toronto Hospital is being tested for Ebola as well as other possible illnesses. So we have that. We have the case in DC that we're continuing to monitor. But now we're going to go to an interview with Stan Monteith, who sadly passed away a few days ago. He was a big inspiration for me way back in 2001. Same, obviously, for Alex Jones. And here is Stan Monteith in his most recent interview before he passed away, talking to Alex Jones back in June 2014. Here's the interview.
Dr. Stan Monteith of RadioLiberty.com has been fighting tyranny for over 40 years. 35 years he was an orthopedic surgeon in Santa Cruz. He led a delegation of physicians for the House Delegates of California Medical Association for 10 years. He's reached millions of people. He's a best-selling author. He wrote AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, and documented that it was basically a bioweapon pointed at minorities. This is a guy that's broadcast 6 hours a day on 4 different radio shows he would do to over 100 affiliates for decades. And when we talk about the icons like Ron Paul and so many others that have come before us, the Red Beckmans, the G. Edward Griffins, the Anthony Suttons, there have been so many. Dr. Stan Monteith is owed just an incredible debt. And that's why people tell me how great I am all day or what a wonderful job I've done. Again, he isn't here for credit. He doesn't want credit. He didn't want to talk about his illness. But I want everybody to pray for Dr. Stan, but also just be thankful for Dr. Stan Monteith, because so much of what we know today is because of him. And he has a book and film archive that he's offered for us to go into and copy. We haven't had the time or energy. We were out here interviewing him a few years ago. He had the flu and would go and lay down because we'd flown out there for about 30 minutes, go be sick in the bathroom, come out, do 30-minute interview, come back and do it again. That's the dedication of a doctor, a medical doctor, like Ron Paul, like Dr. Larry McDonald. So many of the great super patriots have been medical doctors, and we just are so thankful for Dr. Stan Monteith. And I know today before he came on, he said, I don't want to talk about me. He told the folks this morning, I don't want to talk about my illness. I want to come on and talk about what's happening in Iraq and what's happening here and about the big picture. But I talked to him before the break. I said, people care about you, and we need to talk about it and discuss it. So Dr. Stan Monteith, thank you so much for coming on with us, my friend. And we just are really thankful for all you've done. How many years have you been fighting the New World Order? I know it's over 40, isn't it?
Started in 1962, so it's been 52 years.
52, okay. I was going off an old bio, so 52. Tell folks a little bit about yourself, because, and tell folks about what you're going through right now.
Well, basically, I said I'm retired orthopedic surgeon. I do 5 hours of talk radio 5 days a week, and what a privilege it is to get the information out. Now, as far as my illness is concerned, I have a T-cell lymphoma, which, of course, I had no idea until suddenly the lymph nodes came up all over. But fortunately, why we have here in Santa Cruz some excellent conventional doctors tied into Stanford, and they started me on chemotherapy, and all the lymph nodes are gone. Now, I also certainly am taking the finest alternative medicine, and we have several friends I've known for many years. One of them, Dr. Russell Blaylock, I think he's the finest alternative medical specialist in the country, and he's outlined a program for me of alternative treatments. And I'm guardedly optimistic about it, what's going to happen. All we can do is wait and see and pray. It's really in God's hands. But we do covet the prayers of your listeners, Alex, and hope that people, if God wants me here for another 3 or 4 or 5 years, why, then we'll be here. I really sort of want to see what's happening, because we are entering a very, very difficult time, and I'm really very, very concerned about what's going on over there in the Middle East. And let me just comment that basically what we're seeing in the Middle East today with this war in Iraq is exactly what we saw during the Second World War. What am I talking about? Well, basically, we are funding the Shia Muslims in Iraq. We are funding the Sunni Muslims in Iraq. We're funding both sides. And it really doesn't make sense unless you understand World War II, and this is one of my recent studies, and the most frightening thing is the realization that we funded the Nazis all during World War II.
Just like Anthony Sutton, the congressional hearings confirm what McCarthy has said, the Soviets were funded all along by the robber barons, even during the Vietnam War. That's all declassified now. Our own government put Mao Zedong in to kill 80-plus million of his own people. It's the globalist above the nations playing them off against each other.
Absolutely. We funded both sides during the Vietnam War. But more than that, I mean, we funded the Nazis during the Second World War. And basically, the information is there. The books have been written by responsible people. Anthony Sutton wrote about this. And at the time, it just didn't make any sense. But now there's a fellow named John Loftus who's written a book called America's Nazi Secrets. And John has had a security clearance 3 levels above top secret.
That's right. He was at the highest levels of the Justice Department and in national security with the FBI. We've had him on the show, and he's confirmed that it wasn't just a rat line, that the Nazis were fully in a double deal with the West. Well, you know about the McCormick-Dickstein committees.
Sure.
They tried to overthrow the U.S. in the mid-30s, but Smedley Butler blew the whistle on them. We almost went under not even a Nazi regime, but under a eugenics regime funded by the globalists. But then the globalists double-crossed the Nazis themselves. That's why Hitler was on the cover of Time magazine twice as Man of the Year, as a great guy.
Well, you know, one of the most incredible stories is of the escape of Adolf Hitler. Now, I would say that there's not one person in 1,000 in America who believe that Adolf Hitler didn't die in the bunker there in Berlin. I mean, we've been told that for years. And yet, of course, I've actually talked to at least three men who've been to South America, who talked to the people who took care of Adolf Hitler till he died in 1965. Adolf Hitler was allowed to escape to South America. He and Eva lived there comfortably, for a number of years, for almost 20 years after the war ended. And the fact that they've been able to conceal that information from the American people is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists over almost every means of dissemination of information in the United States, except for alternative media, which is what you do so well. Well, I mean, this is the most amazing story. We have actually several books written by people who have looked into this, and one is written, I'm sure you know Dr. Jerome Kersey, and he's certainly a very reliable Harvard-trained person, writes for WorldNet Daily, and he's written a book on Hitler's escape. There's another one called The Grey Wolf. Another one written by a fellow named Shark, who writes The Shark Hunters. And basically, Adolf Hitler escaped. Now, if that is true, then it means that almost everything we have been told by the media through the years is a lie. And as you and I both know, it is a lie. And until we can get the American people to understand we've been lied to, and we are being lied to, nothing's going to change. But if we're going to turn this thing around, we're going to have to get people informed, and then they're going to have to get involved. And one of the biggest problems is, Alex, is that the average individual, well, he may vote or he may not vote, and he's going to tell other people, but people have to start getting involved in the local political system, in their communities. We're going to have to take America back from the bottom up, because there's control from the top down. And basically, the other side's working every day. Our people don't even want to spend one night a week involved. But, I mean, I would say to every one of your listeners, you've got to get started today, putting in at least one day a week in the political process locally, supporting the local politicians who are honest, get rid of the local politicians who are bad, contribute your money, help get the information out, start talking to people, and get them involved in the political process, and simply change our entire local structure. We need to change our boards of supervisors, our city councils, our school boards, and we need to start taking America back. And if we don't do it, we're going to lose by default. And
well, undoubtedly, if it wasn't for you and so many others that came before you in the last 52 years that you've been fighting, they would have already gotten their program through. But in their globalist own words, they admit they're trying to create an artificial synthetic reality for us.
Right.
Encapsulated, where everything's basically like Times Square, with their disinformation overthrowing reality so they can sell us on all of the unnatural things they want to do. They want to play God. And when you find out that all the major things we've been told are a lie, and then you look at how anti-human the controllers are, you come to the realization that they are occultists. And I know in your book, bestseller, Brotherhood of Darkness, that WorldNet Daily and others helped put out, that you break this down. All these different cults, all these different groups, Skull and Bones, the Illuminati, you name it, they're all really satellites of the same fellow traveler system. Doctor, can you speak to the Brotherhood of Darkness and what their goal is?
Well, basically, you know, how do you make any sense out of what's going on? People will always tell you the enemy is communism. No, we finance communism. Inception, or the enemy's fascism, and the Nazis, and basically this is all a lie. I mean, how do you understand what's going on? How do you understand the series of wars we had, the First World War, the Second World War, and the coming Third World War? Well, you can only understand this when you understand that there is another force there. The people on the right think that the left controls what's going on. The people on the left think that people on the right control it, and they're both wrong. There is this other group, and I call them the Brotherhood of Darkness, but they are made up basically of people of great wealth who are deeply involved in the occult, and they actually rely on supernatural occurrences. They actually have supernatural power. These people have wealth beyond comprehension for the average individual. What is so difficult for most people to believe really is a God. There really are supernatural forces. And once you have a personal relationship with our Lord, or you'll see Him interfering and interjecting Him into your life almost on a daily basis. It's almost impossible to believe, but I'm sure that you and other people who are Christians see that influence of God.
No, I've experienced so much providence, and then I feel ashamed that I'm given this many chances and this much providence. I mean, is that what it feels like for you?
Amen to that. But God is guiding us, and there's a small number of us who are out there on the front lines of this battle, being protected and getting the word out. And I'm just hoping and praying that more and more people will turn to God and get involved in this. We're not going to be able to defeat these wicked people on our own, but with God's help, we can. We're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, but it is really a spiritual battle, and we need God's help, and God will help us if we ask for it, but unfortunately, America as a nation has rejected God. We are a post-Christian nation, and I really fear that God is going to bring His judgment on this nation. I think that's the biggest thing that we have to look forward to now. In fact, there's one thing that Thomas Jefferson said, I will never forget it. God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and His justice will not sleep forever.
I can see that the hammer's dropping. I mean, do you concur with that? Do you feel it in your spirit? And where do you see everything going?
I think that we are in real trouble. I think America has turned against God, and I believe God is going to bring His judgment. Unless, as I mentioned earlier, we have a massive revival. I don't see it coming, but my job, your job, the small group of people in alternative radio are having an impact. And I will tell you, the other side is worried. In fact, I saw this notation the other day. There was some sort of an article in one of the magazines criticizing these crazy people as a conspiracy. But it said that there are almost 23% of the population really believes there is a conspiracy. Well, I think that's pretty good. And I think we're making progress, Alex. All we can do is keep pushing, but also pointing this is not simply an ideological battle. It's a spiritual battle, and try to get people to begin looking to our Lord for salvation and basically for strength, because that's where our strength is going to come from. And if we're going to turn this thing around, it's going to be with God's help, not simply on our own effort.
I'm showing images of the Al-Qaeda troops that have taken over the ISIS forces, and they are just showing the mass graves, the mass executions. There's even gruesome video of it. I don't know if we're going to show that, but I mean, this is just wholesale evil. Every Christian they find is killed. Every policeman they find is killed. This is who our government put in and is now funding the destruction of the very same moderates that were put in compared to these people. This is unspeakable evil that's being committed right now, and it just shows the plan they have for us here as well.
They're funding both sides. That's what most people must understand. We are funding the Shias. We're funding the Sunnis. And we should pull out of there completely, and we should demand immediately. In fact, I said yesterday for the first time, actually contacted my congressman and both my senators and said, pull out immediately. And I would suggest that we ask your listeners to send an email immediately to their congressman and both senators saying pull out. If there was enough of certainly a support across America, we could bring pressure on Obama, and he would begin to back down.
Sure. Here's my issue, and I want to have you back up so we can talk about it. I was against going there both times because it was a setup.
Right.
And I know you were as well. The problem is Saudi Arabia and NATO are behind this ISIS takeover. You've got highways for 20 miles full of the Al-Qaeda forces. They could highway of death them and destroy them. But Obama acts like he's just fumbling around doing nothing. Don't we have a responsibility if we topple the government to not let Al-Qaeda take over?
I think that this is a civil war. You just pull everything out, get out of there completely, and let them solve it on their own. It's going to be a bloodbath happened, but we should not be back there.
No. I agree with you, but that was, back in 1990. Don't let them, do this or let them have a civil war. Now, what I'm saying is the globalists are the ones. This is the same Al-Qaeda group they had attacking Syria. Now they've gone into Iraq. Dr. Stan Monteith, we're all praying for you, brother. Get better, and I want to have you back up soon. Godspeed at Radio Liberty. We all owe you a debt. And say hi to your wife and family for you. God bless you.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Alex. Bye-bye.
Live on the Alex Jones Show with me, Paul Joseph Watson. Alex will be back for the Sunday edition, but just before the break, you heard his interview from back in June with Dr. Stan Monteith, who, of course, sadly passed away just a few days ago now. We're actually giving out the address to Stan's wife. Of course, he was a complete icon of the Liberty Movement going back decades and decades. And people can write their support to Mrs. Monteith. The address is Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, California, 957B. So you can write your support. 73. So that's Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. That's 95073. Write your support for Mrs. Monteith, and of course, all our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. Now, just touching again on Ebola briefly before the break, Drudge has his top story, patient being tested for Ebola at DC's Howard University Hospital. We've got another case in DC. And again, I was called a conspiracy theorist for weeks and months. We were all called that, we were all labelled that, demonised just for questioning whether this would be a genuine threat, for questioning whether the CDC was prepared to handle it. And whereas, Alex will rant and rave, expressing his anger at the CDC, at the feds for their failure to deal with this, my approach is a bit more measured. But still, I'm absolutely flabbergasted at this response, this completely botched response, bringing shame upon the country, because they're not responding much better than the African authorities, who are obviously overwhelmed by this. They don't have the adequate medical provisions to deal with it. And yet America apparently is not doing much better because of the CDC's complete incompetence at not handling this case, letting people into the Ebola-infected apartment, letting cleaning crews clean up the Ebola sick with no protection whatsoever, and a failure to communicate between the hospital, which supposedly allowed this Ebola victim to wander around Dallas for 4 days, potentially infecting hundreds of other people, and yet they refuse. They refuse to block the flights directly into Washington Dulles, and now we've got a potential Ebola victim in Washington, unconfirmed. But if this starts to spread, people are going to have to be fired. That's the only solution. And we're going to have a complete re-evaluation of how we handle this, because the biocontainment facilities, for a start, if we get many more of these patients, just aren't in existence to deal with this. As you saw out of the article we covered earlier, Underground Medic, there are only 19 level 4 biocontainment beds in the whole of the United States to deal with a population of 317 million. So they were caught with their pants down, but they've made the situation even worse in the interim by failing to take the proper precautions. This apartment wasn't even cleaned until last night. The people who went in there to clean it were wearing full biohazmat suits. That protection wasn't offered to the sheriff's deputies who also entered the apartment last night, who are now complaining about the fact they've been placed on leave, potentially exposed to Ebola. We've got some breaking news here just come into my ear. We've got Silver Bullet back in stock. A lot of people have been waiting for this. And in this crazy world, you need to protect your immune system. It's the number one priority. Just this moment, back in stock. Silver Bullet concentrates to a powerful 30 parts per million, triple the strength of other colloidal silver products, most of which are complete garbage. This is free of GMO gluten additives, unlike many of the other products on the market. And you need to get it at InfoWarsLife.com. Protect your immune system. Just back in stock. Colloidal Silver Bullet. InfoWarsLife.com. We'll be back after the break talking Syrian girls. Stay tuned.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It's Paul Joseph Watson back live with the Alex Jones Show Friday edition. Just got word that the new InfoWars magazine is back in stock. Here it is on the desk. ISIS equals Al-Qaeda is the subject of this month's issue. Also got some Ebola articles in the issue, so be sure to get your hands on the latest copy of InfoWars magazine, now available. Economic news, of course, we had the jobs numbers come out today. 5.9% unemployment rate, vehemently celebrated by the mainstream media as a sign of the ongoing, quote, economic recovery. What they won't tell you is the fact, as documented in this Zero Hedge article, Labour participation rate drops to 36-year low, record 92.6 million Americans not in labour force. And again, this unemployment rate doesn't include the people who've stopped looking for work. It's a completely bogus statistic. While by now, according to Zero Hedge, everyone should know the answer for those curious why the US unemployment rate just slid once more to a meager 5.9%, the lowest print since the summer of 2008, the answer is the same one we have shown every month since 2010. The collapse in the labour force participation rate, which in September slid from an already three-decade low, 62.8%, to 62.7%, the lowest in over 36 years. What's more disturbing is that people not in the labour force rose to a new record high, increasing by 315,000 to 92.6 million. So they added 232,000 jobs, yet 315,000 Americans dropped out of the labour force, and they're celebrating this as some great benchmark of the economic recovery. Of course, we know that the real economic figures show that the economy is stagnating and declining. In fact, I wrote an article a few days ago from Foreign Affairs where the CFR did a series of articles concerned about the populist revolt now sweeping Europe and America. Of course, we had the big anti-EU backlash back in May with UKIP and Denmark, the True Finn Party, several others rejecting the Brussels power structure. We've also had the Tea Party emerge over the past few years. And in that article, the CFR expressed their amazement at the fact that this popular uprising was still going. There you see America in decay, the sources of political dysfunction. What's key about this is that they said this populist liberty uprising, both in the United States and Europe, which was threatening the two-party monopolies in both those continents, needs to be, quote, co-opted. Those were the exact words they used, co-opted. So again, they're going to try and infiltrate these movements, get their own people to represent these movements, and then sell everybody down the river. Now, in that article, in the CFR article that I cited, one of the key aspects that they drew attention to, which is causing this populist uprising, is the fact that median household income has declined since 1989. So in the past, 25, 30 years, there's been absolutely zero real economic recovery, and people are struggling under the same conditions they were back in 1989. Nothing has improved. They see the article establishment desperate to co-opt populist uprising to neutralize what they call the American distemper. And that distemper is arising out of the fact that these living standards continue to stagnate and decline, as evidenced again by this article, the wageless recovery. Average hourly earnings suffer first monthly decline since July 2013. So wages are on the decline. Large numbers of people dropping out of the labour force. And yet the mainstream media and the government are celebrating the economic numbers like it's some great recovery. The real figures suggest otherwise. We'll be back in the next segment with Syrian Girl talking about ISIS, Gamergate, and a lot more. This is The Alex Jones Show live, Infowars.com. Stay tuned.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We're back live on the Friday edition of The Alex Jones Show. I'm Paul Joseph Watson, filling in for Alex, who will be back on Sunday for the Sunday show. We're now going to be joined by Syrian Girl, Syrian activist and blogger, who, of course, needs no introduction. She's been on the show many times. Syrian Girl, welcome to The Alex Jones Show.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
Now, let's talk about ISIS first, because, of course, we had these airstrikes launched in Iraq, what was it, a couple of months ago now. They expanded them into Syria back a couple of weeks ago. No real news, though, on what kind of effect they're having. There was one Marine who died. He went missing, I believe it was yesterday. But in terms of ISIS, we've not really heard anything about whether or not these airstrikes are actually pushing them back, allowing whoever rebels the US wants to support this week to take back the territory supposedly vacated in the aftermath of those airstrikes. So tell us exactly the situation, if these airstrikes are actually having an impact on these ISIS militants.
I think it's clear, if you watch the news, that ISIS is still advancing. They've been advancing on Kobane, which is in the north of Syria, the northeast of Syria. It's a Kurdish town, and if anyone's been observing the news, they've almost taken the town now, and they've absolutely taken an area called Ain al-Arab. And also they've been advancing in Iraq, and they've been getting closer and closer to Baghdad. So as many people predicted, these airstrikes really do nothing but create more recruits for ISIS. Because once the airstrikes began, there was talk that the actual recruitment for ISIS doubled, with more and more of these youths being convinced that, after all, we are fighting the US. The US isn't backing ISIS, you know. That's caused more recruits. So the only way to really fight these groups is to stop the source and to cut the umbilical cord of their supporters, which are, again, you know, Turkey and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and Qatar.
Now, there was a report, 6,000 new ISIS members just days after these airstrikes in Syria have been launched. And it's a point that I've made many times before. You flood the region with weapons, you bomb the region, you only create more radicalization. All the university studies show that bombing the region, flooding it with weapons, only causes more terrorism, and yet the United States continues to do so. Are they merely creating the terrorists they need to justify further military occupation and expansion in the Middle East?
Well, you have to judge people by what they do, not what they say. And in spite of all the rhetoric of fighting terrorism, what they've done for the last 10 years, in fact, or more, is to create these terrorist groups and to keep them growing. I mean, it was clear that the training and the weapons they gave to the FSA went into the hands of ISIS eventually, when the FSA, or they call them moderate rebels, defected to ISIS and took all the weapons and training that the US provided with them. It's a clear double standard. And we predicted, in fact, on my channel, I said that these strikes are only going to gain ISIS more recruits. And that is exactly what happened. And of course, you know, the Syrian Air Force was already airstriking the areas in Raqqa where ISIS were. So more airstrikes isn't actually going to do anything. What needs to stop is allowing these groups across the border. And Turkey, a NATO member, a US ally, has so far not done so. In fact, there's plenty of videos and footage online of ISIS merchandise being sold in Istanbul, Turkey, and ISIS members actually being given medical aid by Turkey. So I don't think that this would occur without the US's okay, because Turkey is, after all, a NATO member, and it's subject to some sort of influence by the US as well. Also, we should talk about the other group, not just ISIS, but Jabhat al-Nusra as well.
Exactly. There's a Financial Times article, Syria Islamists Seek Truce with ISIS After Being Targeted by US. And this is Jabhat al-Nusra, who, of course, many of the so-called moderate FSA groups pledged allegiance to as far back as 2012, I believe. And Jabhat al-Nusra is, of course, a radical extremist jihadist group that's committed atrocities almost on a par with ISIS. They're now embroiled in bed with the FSA. Tell us about Jabhat al-Nusra and how they relate to the ISIS militant group.
Well, you know, absolutely, they're just as barbaric, if not more so, and they are on par with ISIS. They were around before ISIS, and they are very similar to the other insurgent groups in Syria that are extremist and sectarian. And if you recall, there was a split between Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and that also coincided between a split between Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS as well. And now that the US is bombing both ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra at the same time, instead of splitting them up, they've actually unified them into one big group. And not only them. In fact, it's called the Hazm movement, which is the moderate rebel group that the US is actually has provided arms to and training. The only group that has provided arms to, you know, on paper, not with the back doors and as a middleman. But this group that started as the moderate group actually condemned the strikes against Jabhat al-Nusra. Because they have said in the past, they've told the Independent that Jabhat al-Nusra is their ally in the war against the Syrian government and Assad. And they basically have no problem with Jabhat al-Nusra. It's not their problem, it's the US's problem, and they're not going to fight it. So the idea that these moderate rebels are against Al-Qaeda or fighting Al-Qaeda is has now been exposed as complete lies, basically.
Now, I believe it was 2 days ago or 3 days ago, there was a huge bombing in Homs, in a, you know, quote, government-controlled area, of a school which killed 41 school children. Now you see the Al Jazeera headline, children killed in Homs, double blast, killed 45 people, including 41 children. This basically got no mainstream coverage whatsoever. It was in Al Jazeera. Imagine if a school was bombed in America and 41 kids died. I mean, that... No attention whatsoever on this. And why? Well, because it's being carried out by the very same rebels that are in bed with the FSA, which are about to receive a huge new cachet of weapons courtesy of the Obama administration. So tell us about this school bombing that just occurred.
Well, you know, it's very easy for the media who do report it to try to blame it on ISIS, but actually ISIS doesn't have much of a presence in the Homs region in the southwest of Syria. They do have a presence, but it's very minimal. And what happened was Homs was touted as the heart of the revolution only about a year ago, until it was actually taken back by the government forces and the military. So the Syrian troops secured these areas, and now the only way that these extremist militias can extract basically vengeance upon those residents of Homs that are now living their daily lives is to have these suicide bombings. And it wouldn't be the first time. That area has been under car bombs like twice or three times in the past. And the fact that BBC and, you know, I've looked up the coverage of the story and it's very minimal. They try to ignore it because they don't want to point out the atrocities of the rebels that they have been supporting for the last 3 years and calling democratic, you know, freedom fighters. And in this attack against the school was a deliberate attack. There was no military targets anywhere around the proximity of the region. There were not any soldiers or anything like that. And the bombs went off just as the kids were coming out of the school. And there's video footage of it online, and it's quite horrific. I would warn anyone that would search for it. But it's interesting also that some of these human rights groups and NGOs also didn't have much of coverage of it. And in fact, the Syrian Electronic Army had to hack into the Twitter and the page of UNICEF just to get them to cover the Homs car bombing. And as soon as they got their accounts back, of course, they deleted any evidence of the car bombing of the school.
So did anyone actually claim responsibility for the bombing?
As far as I know, not yet, no. But it's quite a cowardly attack, and I think it's clearly to revenge against these people that are going back to live in Homs. They want to make sure that they don't live peacefully, or perhaps even to try to kick them out of Homs and to restart things there, because Homs is a very important city. All roads lead to Homs and into Lebanon. So this is one of the reasons why it became the heart of the revolution, because it's a very strategic city.
And there was this new group that suddenly emerged out of nowhere, Khorasan, a couple of weeks ago, which the Obama administration claimed it had bombed. Tell us about Khorasan. Is that a real group, or is it just an offshoot of Jabhat al-Nusra?
Khorasan is basically just Jabhat al-Nusra. And I don't know why they've decided to give them a new name. I suspect it's because they don't want to make it clear that they're targeting Jabhat al-Nusra, because it would anger all of the moderate rebels that they're supporting in Syria, and anger all of the people in Syria who support the insurgency and the revolution, who also happen to support Jabhat al-Nusra. And you can see that, again, you know, even the group that the US has said that these are the moderates and these are the people we're giving weapons to, said that, you know, we condemn the strikes against Jabhat al-Nusra, because if they don't do so, then, they're going to lose a lot of supporters, and they can't survive without Jabhat al-Nusra. Many times the Western media has admitted that Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS are basically the main groups fighting in Syria, and yet they're still trying to undermine the Syrian government.
Okay, we'll be back after the break. Calls for Syrian Girl, 1-800-259-9231. This is the Alex Jones Show Live. Get your calls in. Back live on the Alex Jones Show Friday edition with me, Paul Joseph Watson. Breaking news, the hazmat teams that are there to clean up the Ebola-infected apartment of Ebola victim Thomas Duncan, who of course came into Dallas a few days ago, have finally arrived 3 days after the fact, after he was announced to be the first Ebola victim in the United States. So it took the CDC at least 3 days to dispatch a proper hazmat team to clean up that apartment, again underlining the alarming incompetence of the federal government in dealing with this Ebola outbreak. Mimi Al-Laham, Syrian Girl, I know you've been tracking Ebola. You made a video about that recently. Give us your take on the Ebola outbreak.
Well, you know, I've actually been looking into Ebola because it's a very interesting virus for many years now. And I remember just learning about how it's one of the deadliest viruses known to man. It has a 90% kill rate, especially the Zaire strain, which is apparently the strain we're facing right now. And interestingly, there was no Ebola before the 1970s. And the first case of Ebola was actually not in Africa. Well, an Ebola-like virus, the relative of it being Marburg. The first case of Marburg, which was related to Ebola, was actually in Germany. And only after that were the second cases that came out in Africa. So the origins of Ebola are actually not known about. And this outbreak seems to be different to any other outbreak in the past. Because in the past, Ebola has killed so quickly and with such a high rate that it hasn't been able to spread. But in this case, it seems to be spreading out of control. Nobody knows why this outbreak occurred and why it seems to be different from all the rest.
So do you think there may be a possibility that it's gone airborne, at least to a limited extent, as many of the other experts are now saying, including the UN Ebola chief yesterday said that it could mutate and go airborne, that was the main threat now?
Well, I've read that once viruses enter enough hosts that they could mutate and go airborne. The thing is, Ebola, just as it is now, is classified as a Category A biological weapon. And it's, you know, it's, they've had actually teams in Sierra Leone and in other regions of Africa actually researching Ebola for its use as a biological weapon. The US military has had scientists researching about it there. And that's all, you know, open knowledge. So I don't know any information about what is actually the cause of Ebola, but these points are interesting to note because, of course, you know, in this kind of world that we're living in, on the verge of World War III, and with the superpowers all trying to outdo each other, research into biological weapons is the sort of in the next step besides nuclear weapons. And you know, it's interesting if Ebola does go airborne, though, that it would be really disastrous. But I do know that sometimes when viruses mutate into something airborne, they actually may or may not make them less deadly. So we'll see how that goes. It may have already gone airborne, but usually you can actually tell by the shape of the virus whether or not it's capable of being airborne. Certainly, it seems to be very contagious, and maybe it's spread by even small particles of the virus, of the saliva in air, could potentially spread the virus as well.
And what do you think about the health authorities in the United States? You know, they let this guy walk around for 2 days, actually 4 days. He went back to the hospital 2 days later. They let him walk around for the best part of a week infected with Ebola. The response since has been nothing more than pathetic. They've the apartment there, they've sent in people with unprotected gear to literally hose down the Ebola sick off the sidewalk. They've let sheriff's deputies into the apartment with no protection whatsoever. What do you think about the federal government response and what it says about how prepared the United States is for an Ebola outbreak?
I think it's really shocking, the fact that the man went to hospital and told them that he's just come back from Africa in one of the infected countries. I'm not sure if it was Liberia or Sierra Leone, but I believe it was probably Liberia. But they just gave him antibiotics and sent him home. I mean, that's quite shocking. And, you know, the response is maybe being tested as well through this outbreak, and it's clearly not coming up to standard.
Okay, we'll be back after the break. Your calls for Syrian Girl. This is The Alex Jones Show live. Infowars.com. Keep it locked in.
We've got it.
Waging war on corruption.
All right, you are a go.
It's Alex Jones, coming to you live from the front lines of the info war.
We're back live, Friday edition of the Alex Jones Show, talking to Syrian Girl, otherwise known as Mimi Alaham. Your calls coming shortly. Huffington Post: global warming created ISIS. Yes, that was an actual article in the Huffington Post. You see, there was a drought in Syria from 2006 to 2010, and they claim that happened because of climate change, even though droughts worldwide over the last 30 years are down. They blamed this drought for being responsible for the rise of jihadists in Syria and ISIS, even though ISIS was not even formed in Syria. Of course, it was formed in Iraq. So these climate change alarmists are now actually blaming global warming for the rise of jihadists in Syria. Mimi Alham, of course, nothing to do with the fact that the US armed the jihadists in the first place, that they trained ISIS members in Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, bankrolled them to the hilt. It can all be explained by global warming. What do you think of that?
Well, even the drought itself wasn't caused by global warming. It was caused by the Turkish president damming the river that runs into Syria in order to destabilize the Syrian government. And he's on record for saying, telling the previous president, Hafez al-Assad, not this current one, that, you know, your people can drink sand. And that is the reason for the drought in Syria. It wasn't global warming in the first place. The Turkish government did this purposely to get people, to get the Syrian economy weakened and to get people angry. And it continues to be Turkish policy and the US government policy that leads to these jihadist groups and has led to groups like ISIS. And, you know, interestingly, the Turkish government now are talking about having invasion plans into Syria, using ISIS as an excuse and saving the Kurds as an excuse. Because of the problems now happening on the Turkish border, 200,000 Kurds have crossed into Turkey now, Syrian Kurds crossing into Turkey. And of course, Turkey actually doesn't like having Kurds coming into Turkey because they see Kurds as a potential threat and separatists. And as a result, you know, that is probably one of the reasons they are worrying about what's happening in Syria right now. And they, in fact, the Turkish war leaks in 6 months ago revealed where Erdogan's ministers were talking about war plans in Syria, that they were going to use ISIS in a false flag operation on a Turkish tomb and to try to get some excuse to go into Syria. And that's all on YouTube. You can have a look at it. And as a result, Erdogan actually shut YouTube down that day just to prevent his people from listening to it just before the election.
Okay, we're going to get back into ISIS soon with the callers, but we're running low on time now. So let's get into Gamergate. This is an amazing topic that's kind of slipped under the radar over the past month or so. It began in August. And this is an attempt by individuals to hijack the video game industry to implant social engineering and basically brainwashing messages. Explain how that emerged.
Well, actually, Gamergate is a very, very interesting and promising sort of Twitter phenomenon that's going on right now. It's a hashtag on Twitter of gamers who have actually been able to expose collusion between the media and a think tank called DIGRA, which is supported by DARPA, the military and government ministry. DARPA is providing money to this think tank called DIGRA that's specializing in sort of injecting social engineering into video games. And they're trying to sort of say, apply their sort of multiple genders, as we saw in Facebook, and they call them social justice warriors, you know, sort of a fake pseudo-feminism, taking up the cause of racism, feminism, and all of those things, not in real support of equality, but to try to pit races and genders against each other. And what's happened is that these gamers have rejected these people and have been sort of starting to make connections between the video game journalism, these think tanks, and certain video game developers that are creating games specifically to social engineer people. One of those is, her name is, I forget her first name, but her last name is Quinn.
Zoe Quinn, yeah.
Zoe Quinn, exactly. And they sort of exposed her connections. And after that, all across all the game journalists, they wrote down the same story. Gamers are dead. The game development industry should ignore their market and start producing games that are politically correct and no longer consider what the gamers themselves want, but sort of what the think tanks and the academics and the social engineers want them to produce. And all the journalists seem to be colluded on that. And what's going on now is these gamers have a mission now to expose these think tanks and these connections with what they themselves, what even the CEO of a big game industry called Electronic Arts called in his memo, the establishment elite. The establishment elite have injected themselves into movies, film, television, into social media to try to socially engineer society. And it seems that they haven't completely controlled the game industry. They have to some degree in the military aspect of it, but not in the social aspect of it. And that's what they're trying to do right now.
And that's all about shifting the propaganda over from news to entertainment, because they know a lot of young people are turned off by the news. So now they're shifting it, as you said, into video games, movies, television shows. And this is red flag bombshell proof of a deliberate attempt to undermine and hijack the video games industry to implant that politically correct social engineering. It's a story we're going to be covering more in the future. But now we're going to go to calls for Syrian Girl. We got Habu in Wisconsin. Go ahead, Habu. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. And I always learn something listening to Syrian Girl. So you're very enlightening to the people here. You know, let me just have a comment, and I'll be very quick, and then I'll ask you a question. I do believe the U.S. has an obligation to put armed forces on the ground, coordinated with the Syrian forces and the Iraqi forces, to drive out these, or to corner these people. In my estimation, with the superior American air power, this should be a pretty straightforward thing, and in under 6 months, this would be done. So my question to Syrian Girl, there's just two quick questions. One, do you think President Assad is really setting himself up for regime change as this bombing just morphs and kind of encroaches upon his power centers, meaning the air? And the second thing is, I think that the present Iraqi constitution should be torn up and written anew so that it embraces all different types of people in Iraqi society, which it doesn't do now. So thank you very much for the courtesy, and keep on enlightening the world, Syrian Girl.
Thank you so much for your kind words. In principle, the idea of the U.S. and Syria coordinating against these extremist groups like ISIS, you know, that might be a good idea, but in fact, I think that U.S. troops on the ground anywhere in the Middle East is just going to exacerbate matters. U.S. troops on the ground would only embolden these groups into fighting and gaining more recruits and believing that their cause is the right cause. And I think that with everything that the U.S. has been doing in the region, especially since they've been supporting these Islamist groups that are extreme in Libya as well as Syria, you know, they really don't have any agenda to actually fight ISIS. ISIS is basically the monster they created in order to have an excuse, some kind of excuse to intervene. I think that, you know, the Syrian people, we don't want any foreigners on the ground. We don't need any help. All we need is for the people who are supporting these groups and who are arming the insurgents to stop undermining the state, to stop undermining the military, and then we can take care of it ourselves. We can clear things up in a few months, and our military is more than capable of doing that. They just have to stop the money flow, and that would be all. But I do think that the U.S. strikes on Syria right now, just as I said, it's not so much about fighting ISIS. As we've seen, ISIS is still gaining ground. They're still gaining recruits, even more so now. So it's not really about fighting ISIS. I think it does still have a lot to do with regime change. And finally, about the Iraqi constitution. You know, the Iraqi constitution was written during the U.S. occupation of Iraq. And I know that James Steele and Robert Ford had an agenda to create a civil war in Iraq, to put Sunnis and Shiites against each other, and to eventually balkanize the country. And they wrote up the constitution themselves, and the majority, like the only part of the Iraqi society, voted for it. So it was divisive to begin with. And I totally agree with you on the Iraqi constitution on that point.
Slim in Canada, you're on the air with Syrian Girl. Go ahead, Slim.
Hi, Syrian Girl. First of all, Eid Mubarak. And you're welcome. My question is regarding ISIS. A while back, I used to be a gamer myself. It's funny you guys mention that. The gaming industry, I used to play this game called Call of Duty, and there used to be this, you could make create clans, and the strongest and most vast clan in that game when I played it a few years ago was ISIS. I don't know if that's a coincidence or what's going on, but with respect to them being like just basically a cult they are basically just a death cult. To me, that's what I my opinion of them. And the fact that they have the name the Islamic State is just, you know, a slap in the face for everybody as far as I'm concerned. What do you guys think about that?
Your comments, Seringo.
I think it's basically the worst kind of face you could give to Islam, and maybe that's part of the agenda. You know, we're talking about a clash of civilizations, and these kind of groups, they didn't exist before. This is a recent phenomenon, and most of the people they're killing are actually Muslims. So it's funny that they should call themselves the Islamic State. I find it very interesting that the biggest clan in Call of Duty was ISIS. I was wondering if it stood for anything. That would be interesting to know if it was an acronym for anything.
Derek, in Wyoming, you're on the air with Syrian Girl. Go ahead, Derek.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Syrian Girl. I just want to tell InfoWars I appreciate all you're doing, and I believe we can wake people up in our areas on vaccines and everything else. I've done so with Common Core and visited our local county nurse on vaccines. They're looking at it. I think we got to get off our couches. And Syrian Girl, thank you so much. And it seems to me that she should be on every network talking about this, but they just have propaganda. So I want to ask you, Syrian Girl, why do you think that Israel is not being targeted by ISIS?
That's a very, very good question. Why indeed is Israel not being targeted by ISIS? I think that none of these groups seem to be really targeting Israel. And in fact, Israel is helping Jabhat al-Nusra on the Syrian Golan Heights borders. And it's this is a fact that they're giving them medical aid, treating their wounds, giving them a buffer zone, and shooting down any Syrian airplane, jet, or helicopter that is chasing Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda group, down. So Israel is sort of acting as the air defenses of al-Qaeda. And it's very interesting why these groups who are supposed to be so, you know, anti any other religion wouldn't attack Israel. And I think that maybe it has something to do with the people who control ISIS, leading them and directing them to attack, you know, Syria instead of Israel. So,
Sanger in Texas, you're on the air with Syrian Girl. Your question, go ahead. Do we have Sanger in Texas? Frank in Carolina, go ahead.
Yes, you can hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay. Dr. Watson, with respect to your coverage of the Ebola thing, you know, I sometimes think we give this, you know, agencies like the CDC way too much credit for incompetence and whatnot. I mean, the way I look at it, I'm not even following it that closely, but if they wanted to create some type of a crisis, they couldn't do a better job as far as setting all the chess pieces into place. And that's my take on it, and I know a lot of other people would agree with that. And Syrian Girl, I had a question for you. Would you say, based on your research and all the goings-on in the Middle East and with ISIS, that this is primarily probably being engineered and managed by the Nazis or perhaps their descendants?
I don't have any details about that, but I do believe that, you know, you can kill a man, but you can't kill an idea. So maybe, you know, in some degree, there's a connection between, you know, the fascism of old or the groups that basically the establishment elite who created these ideologies, whether they be Nazism or Marxism or, you know, anything that was useful at the time, whether they be good ideologies or bad ideologies. I don't really, I wouldn't say, you know, Nazis are behind these things, but certainly there's been a rise of neo-Nazism in Ukraine. That's as far as I can really comment on that.
Bruce in Michigan wants to talk about Iran. You're on the air with Syrian Girl. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, okay, thank you. You know, there are more Christians in Lebanon and Syria than anywhere else in the Middle East. And no one, Tel Aviv, Riyadh, Paris, London, or Washington would replace Mr. Assad with would be better for the Christians than Mr. Assad. I just read some articles by Bassem Marou out of Lebanon and, of course, Paul Craig Roberts about how Christians are arming themselves again in Lebanon, and they can see what's coming down the pike. Our government and mass media have hoodwinked us into supporting an air campaign. Now they're talking about troops on the ground there in Syria. Now, there was a CIA guy, some kind of deputy named Mellon, Michael Mellon, who said that they will probably have to assassinate Mr. Assad. I don't think Russia is going to help you this time. I remember back, when was it, a couple years ago, there were 400,000 people in the streets there in Damascus cheering Lavrov after they vetoed that first no-fly zone resolution. I don't think Russia has guts enough to do it. I think they're tucking their tail between their legs and pussyfooting. Doesn't this mean that Iran will be Syria's last hope for defense against regime change?
Okay, we'll get Syrian girl's answer to that question after the break. We're going to get into some more personal details about what Syrian girl has faced in standing up against the propaganda that's been in favour of overthrowing the regime in Syria. David Knight also coming up in studio. We're going to cover more news, the entire waterfront of issues, the economy as well. This is The Alex Jones Show live, Infowars.com. Don't go away. Live on the Alex Jones Show, quick news update here out of CBS Atlanta. Report inmate at Cobb County Jail being tested for Ebola. Of course, earlier we had potential cases in DC and Toronto. Thankfully, most of these cases normally turn out to be negative, but an inmate at the Cobb County Jail is reportedly being tested for Ebola. We'll keep track of that. Also, the cleanup crew, the hazmat crew en route to that apartment, the potentially Ebola-infected apartment in Dallas, have been delayed once again because they haven't got a permit. So the incompetence of the CDC continues to know no bounds. We thought that that cleanup crew had actually been in place last night. Turns out that they haven't even got the permit to conduct the cleanup of the Ebola apartment. Going back to Syrian girl now, this is a sensitive subject, but she was targeted by a huge defamation campaign recently. And then a separate incident where somebody actually called her university and basically made some astounding claims. I'll let Syrian girl explain it. Syrian girl, go ahead.
Well, actually, because there's a lawsuit going on and I can't actually comment very much on the case under the advice of my lawyer, I can't specifically mention what the defamation was about, but I can say that it was quite horrendous. And especially in the case where the man contacted my university,
you were involved in a kind of a propaganda offensive against him because you did some research which kind of disproved what he was saying. He was coming down on the side of Assad regarding the Assad's opponents, of course, regarding the chemical weapons attack. So you did some research which proved him wrong. He got a big chip on his shoulder, resentful, and he actually called your university and basically implied that you might be a terrorist. Is that the case?
Well, again, I can't comment on specifically what he said, but anyone who's been following the case might already know I was working with Professor Ted Postol of MIT just to give him a bit of chemistry help, because he was looking into the claims by two individuals, which I'm not sure if I'm allowed to name myself on the show.
We'll avoid the names.
Okay. That made these outrageous claims to the mainstream media that a specific chemical called hexamine was smoking gun evidence that the Syrian government used the sarin on Damascus, and that this hexamine itself is the fact that it was in the soil samples is just proof enough. The problem with that is that hexamine is a chemical that's found in many explosives, and that would make sense why it would be in the soil samples. Furthermore, the man who's making these claims is not a chemist. He has no background in chemistry, but the mainstream media, because he's saying something that supports their line, has touted him as an expert. And when I helped Professor Ted Postol of MIT look into his claims, I was basically, and tried to prove the fact that he has no idea what he's talking about, he has no knowledge in chemistry, and has nothing to support his claims. Once he found out about my involvement, that's when he decided to attack me directly and attack my career.
Amazing. 30 seconds left. Tell people how they can support you and about your YouTube Twitter account.
Well, if you'd like to support my defamation lawsuit against him and the other people so that I could show them that they cannot do this to anyone and get away with it, no matter how weak they are, you can please help me by donating to me through my blog, Syrian Girl Partisan Blogspot.
And your YouTube is Partisan Girl, correct?
Syrian Girl Partisan.
Okay. Syrian Girl, thanks for joining us. We'll be sure to be speaking to you again. There goes Syrian Girl. Coming up after the break, we're going to have David Knight in studio, taking more of your calls, latest Ebola news, also some economy news, and more. Stay tuned. It's the Alex Jones Show live, Infowars.com.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Third hour of the Alex Jones Show live on this Friday edition, and we're still joined by Syrian Girl. She wanted to make a couple of other points here in the first 5 minute segment of the third hour. We were talking about her being targeted basically for defamation. We can't go into too many details for legal reasons, but because of her research in disproving the notion that the 2013 chemical weapons attack in Ghouta was the work of the Assad government, she was viciously targeted. Syrian Girl, you wanted to make another point on that subject.
In fact, thank you so much. I'm sorry for stealing your airways. In fact, I wasn't going to make it about me or the defamation suit. I would thank anyone who would help me support, because I would love to continue to fight and to continue to, bring my point of view across. So anyone, any kind of support would be a great help. But I did want to just come back on just to mention the fact that just to answer the caller earlier, you know, the narratives can change very quickly. And it's interesting that last year the US media was talking about, the Syrian people, the so poor civilians that are being killed by airstrikes and starvation. And, you know, the airstrikes against Jabhat al-Nusra actually killed tens of civilians, including children. The US airstrikes did. And they also hit a grain silo and killed farmers in Raqqa when they were airstriking ISIS and destroyed, you know, the food supply to Raqqa. So it's very funny that these narratives can change. And now even Obama is meeting with the Christian communities in Syria to try to pretend that he's on their side, when in fact he's been trying to basically eliminate any trace of them in the Middle East, in Syria, Iraq, and probably Lebanon soon enough also. So thank you so much. I'm sorry to take up your airwaves again like this.
One more question. ISIS, what's the ultimate agenda? Is it about the partition of Syria?
Yes, I think it's to do with partition of Syria and of Iraq. And I just want to say it's not good for the American people and it's not good for the Syrian people either. We don't want to see any troops on the ground losing their heads. We don't want to see any planes shot down by Americans either. I think the best situation here is to just live peacefully amongst each other. And yes, ISIS is definitely there to try to take over land. They're not even Syrian. They're coming in from Europe and from all over the world, from Australia and from the US, to kill Syrians and to live on their land and to make Syria as if it was their own country. And part of that is to divide Syria into three pieces. The Kurdish north, the ISIS middle, and the coast just cleaved off for the minorities.
And of course, this ISIS propaganda offensive, which has been embraced and vehemently launched by the mainstream media itself, is founded mainly in recent weeks on these beheading videos, which have raised suspicions for me. What's your take on those?
The beheading videos of journalists. Well, it's interesting that the family members and the family spokesmen of these journalists said that the moderate rebels that Obama is supporting actually sold these men to ISIS. And it's just sort of interesting to me that the beheading videos came just in time when the Syrian air defenses in the northeast of the country collapsed to ISIS. So just when the U.S. government needed to convince the American people that they needed to go into Syria, these videotapes of these journalists being beheaded came out. And then, of course, the other point is that the U.S. Government needed the Syrian air defenses in that region to fall to ISIS before they attacked. Because as the Pentagon has continuously said, they find that the Syrian air defenses are a risk. And that's the only reason why Dempsey said that we can't airstrike Syria, we can only have kinetic strikes, which means launching missiles from boats at the country.
Okay, we'll leave it for there. Syrian Girl, thanks for joining us. We'll be back after the break with David Knight in studio covering the latest on Ebola, the economy, and more. This is the Alex Jones Show Live. Latest breaking news at Infowars.com. Keep it locked in.
Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
We'll be fighting in the streets with our children at our feet. In tomorrow's the day.
We're back live on the Alex Jones Show Friday edition. David Knight in studio, and we're going to switch back into some Ebola news before taking your calls at 1-800-259-9231. Earlier we had the clip from Anderson Cooper where he was talking to the partner of the Ebola victim there in Dallas. She basically said she got no advice whatsoever from the CDC on how to clean the apartment, that the Ebola-stained bed sheets and the towels that this victim had been using were still there in the apartment. Again, no proper advice on disposal. Now we have the hazmat teams being delayed because of a failure to obtain a permit. We've got Judge Clay Jenkins responding to this apartment, this potentially Ebola-infected apartment, who acknowledged, quote, some hygiene issues in the department, in the apartment. So that's how concerned he is. And David, as he said just in the break, the CDC seems to be the least concerned out of all these different authorities about this Ebola outbreak.
Absolutely, Paul. You've got these conflicts between different jurisdictions. One of the things that they're reporting in CNN is that we heard that there was a delay in the cleanup because a permit issue stopped it. Well, the issue is that the Texas Highway Association and Department of Transportation, others, do not allow these kinds of hazardous materials to just be transported on the highway. But, of course, the CDC says, that's not any problem. Just go ahead and do it. New York Times reports that part of this delay was that officials had found it very difficult to find a contractor who was willing to go to the apartment and clean it up, to remove the bedding and clothes, which they say was bagged in plastic. They found somebody. They're called the cleaning guys. And I don't know
if that fills me with confidence. Maybe it's the two guys who were hosing down the vomit off the pavement earlier.
Yeah, this is serious stuff. I mean, it is so incredibly stupid and incompetent that it is funny. It's kind of graveyard humor, isn't it? To see those guys out there and the pictures that you see from the helicopter, they're out there, like you pointed out earlier, just in a T-shirt, hosing it down, and there's somebody walking by. I mean, that's actually spreading it around. That's not cleaning it up. No precautions for, no concern for the workers who are going in there and cleaning this up. No concern for the police officers. It was the guy who was president of the Dallas Police Officers Union who had the concern for his officers. There was still a cavalier attitude from the health department, from the CDC. They are the ones who don't really seem to get it. They don't really seem to care. If it is overkill, let's do that before we do have a lethal pandemic going out into the community. It seems like that would be exercising care over the top because they don't know how to contain this. Obviously, it's not contained in Africa. And there's a lot of questions that you raised yesterday. You pointed out people are raising as to how it's transmitted. We've had reports coming out of Canada where they believe that it is very easily transmitted by aerosols. And of course, that's not technically airborne, but essentially the same thing. I mean, it's they're arguing over semantics. So there needs to be more care because they haven't been able to confine this. They're doubling the number of cases that they reported at the CDC every couple of weeks still in Liberia. And they're projecting that it's going to be anywhere from 500,000 to 1.5 million people by January, just in those two countries that are hardest hit.
And here we have the tweet, again, which I showed earlier from Scott Gordon, NBC5, here on the document cam. Four sheriff's deputies, health director, doctor, went into Ebola victim's apartment without protection last night, Sheriff's Association says. And here you can see one of the images from right outside the apartment. You see three completely unprotected individuals being allowed into the apartment. Of course, we had the shock image shows unprotected workers cleaning up Ebola vomit in Dallas there on the document cam. This was shot by WFAA. And these guys were hired to hose down the pavement immediately outside the apartment where the Ebola victim was kept before he was taken to hospital.
Amazing.
I mean, I when I first saw this, I thought that's got to be some kind of hoax, some kind of unrelated picture. But we digged into it, and it's WFAA TV. It's confirmed.
It's amazing to see that. And then I was aghast at the time stamp on that. That was yesterday at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, the press conference that was a couple of days after they had learned that this guy had Ebola, that occurred on Wednesday. And of course, at that time, we were told by government officials like Rick Perry and CDC officials that they were the most professional in the world. We had the best medical system. They were very well acquainted with how to contain this. They were doing everything that needed to be done. At that point, everybody was saying, but wait a minute, you sent the guy home with essentially an aspirin the first time he showed up at the hospital, even though it came out that he was from Liberia. They clearly weren't looking for that information. He mentioned it as he was being checked in. He said, I don't have a social security number because I'm not from America. I'm from Liberia. But it appears that the health care workers, not just the people who are checking him in and doing the processing of payment, looks like the health care workers were not screening for that. That's why that information wasn't passed along. But now it is far worse than that. If you stop and think about how long it has been, just today they're getting there to clean the apartment. They just cleaned the sidewalk yesterday. You had the ambulance worker who said that they didn't notify the fire department for days after everything happened. They took 48 hours to quarantine the ambulance. When you look at how much stuff was done, it wasn't just sending the guy home to percolate for a couple of more days before he got much worse and brought to the hospital again. I mean, we're seeing an avalanche of information about how they've dropped the ball here over the last 3 or 4 days.
And here's the article that David just mentioned there. Dallas paramedic slams health officials, was not informed of Ebola diagnosis, drove contaminated ambulance for 2 days. He says the reports of officials tracking those potentially contaminated are, quote, bull crap. Those are his words. And this is the quote. 3 days after the fact, I had to demand exposure testing, and they are reporting following up with all the people in the ambulance, ? Bull crap. They haven't even followed up with the 10 firefighters that were on duty Sunday. So, David, I mean,
this guy is outraged, and he ought to be outraged. He's been exposed to a disease that kills 70% of the people in a horrific way. His family has been exposed now indirectly because there's also a possibility that it could travel to them. This is something people need to get angry about. They need to demand that these people are going to do something. We've seen them just pull back and allow undocumented Democrats to come in over the borders, not do anything about any of this, pretend that they've got the borders sealed, pretend that they've got everything under control with the CDC. They clearly are just trying to preserve their careers. These are people who, like Obama, have never, ever done anything in their life other than run for political office or get a political position. And so these people at the top are trying to assuage everybody's concerns about this while they do absolutely nothing. It's the people who are not even involved with the CDC that are doing things. People need to be aware of what the dangers are for themselves individually. Your government, as usual, is not going to be there to protect you. You need to take your own precautions. But now, before it affects somebody in your family, now is the time for people to get angry and to contact these people and demand that they do something. They're asleep at the wheel.
I mean, how long before we start to call for the head of the CDC to be fired over this? I mean, heads need to roll, surely.
That would be the very least. And, of course, there was the article from on Infowars.com earlier today about how Obama, back in 2010, quietly rolled back precautions that would be in place for just this type of thing. At the time, they were worried about bird flu. And of course, we had 21 million people killed and 19 die in 1918, far more than died in World War I because of flu. And that was transmitted because of people returning home from areas where there was a war. And so it's that kind of travel. Today, we have a very dynamic world where people are traveling across the globe in very short periods of time. I mean, back in 1918, if you had an Ebola situation like this, many people on board a ship would have already been showing symptoms before they got to the United States, probably. But today they can do it in just a few hours. And so that's something that is of great concern. So they had regulations in place that would have required the airlines to keep additional records so that they could go back and do contact tracing in case something showed up. That was pushed back by the airline industries. The American Civil Liberties Union was concerned that there were going to be records kept of people. That was before we learned about Ed Snowden. That was before we learned that they're keeping records on everything. Of course, the only thing that they really are not going to stop keeping records on is anything related to political power. They want to know everything about who is a threat to them politically, but they don't want to know anything about something that would protect the American people.
And going back to the airliners, obviously, the CDC has come out repeatedly, said they're not going to call to block any airlines. As far as I understand it, David, the direct flights from West Africa, do they go into Washington Dulles?
Well, it's not clear. I mean, there's a lot of different airlines that will go. Usually, there are intermediate stops. Usually, there's at least 2 to 3 stops when you're looking at traveling from Liberia to Dallas, for example. If you're going to an East Coast city, you might get there in just one hop. I don't know that there's any direct flights going from East Coast cities to Western Africa. I'm not sure. But the issue is that the airlines know when you get on a plane, they know what your itinerary is there. But there's other methods that they could do. If they were to keep track of people's, if they were just to hold the records of people that had traveled on planes, then if something were to happen like this, they could backtrack it and look at contact information, which would be something that would actually benefit the people who had been on the plane. It would be something that in retrospect would be helpful to them. As you mentioned, when you traveled and there was a concern about flu, they came onto the plane where you were a passenger. Where was that, China?
Or China.
Mainland China, yeah. They came onto the plane in hazmat suits and checked people for temperature and that sort of thing. So there's certain things that they could do. Nothing is 100% certain, but there's things that they could do to minimize the risk. And that's the point. You're never going to have anything that you do that's going to be 100% effective, but you can do your best to try to minimize the risk. They're not even concerned about that.
Breaking news as well out of Politico. Bobby Jindal, Louisiana governor, ban travel from Ebola nations. He's calling on the Obama administration to impose a travel ban on flights coming to the US from countries with Ebola outbreaks. So prominent individuals now starting to call for that. We'll cover Hong Kong, the internet, more news coming up. Obviously, we're going to dip back into Ebola. Your calls as well coming up at 800-259-9231. This is the Alex Jones Show live, Infowars.com. Your calls straight ahead. Keep it locked in. Friday edition of the Alex Jones Show with me, your host, Paul Joseph Watson, joined by David Knight in studio. We're just going to dip back into the latest Ebola news. David, we had this revocation of this 2010 CDC measure, which kind of would have protected, to some extent, America against potential Ebola victims coming in from outside the country. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is the original article back in 2010 from USA Today. It says Obama administration scraps quarantine regulations, and they start out by saying that the Obama administration quietly scrapped plans to enact sweeping new federal quarantine regulations. These were regulations that they'd proposed back in 2005. It would have given the federal government additional powers to detain sick airline passengers, and it would have required that airlines report passengers that are sick to the CDC and require that they collect and maintain contact information for flyers if they later need it to be traced. Now, this was removed under the pretense that, well, we don't want to violate anybody's privacy. Look, they're looking at everybody's records when you buy your plane tickets. They're completely investigating your background. They're keeping that information. And, of course, we subsequently learned after 2010, we had been telling people this for quite some time, but now there's no question about it, that our government is spying on every detail of our life. This isn't a privacy issue. This is something that could actually help people who were flying on the plane with someone who is sick. But of course, that was scrapped 4 years ago. And now we see that that's exactly the type of thing that needs to be done. But of course, the federal officials are not interested in that. Rather, they're taking a very cavalier attitude about that. There's some breaking news about what's going on in the schools there in Dallas. I saw this when, this is an article, I think it's up on Drudge from the Telegraph in the UK, and they were talking about missteps that had happened over just the last few days already with this Ebola patient in Dallas. And one of the things that they said was that five children who went to four local schools in the area that had direct contact with him were only pulled out of school on Wednesday. On the 30th. Now, you know, he went back in anywhere from 2 to 3 days before that. They knew that he had Ebola. And this is about the time that they're doing the press conference talking about how professional everything has been. Yet for 2 days, they allow these kids to continue to go to school there in Dallas. And they point out that one of the schools is only a few hundred yards from the apartment where he lived. And they were just out there blowing, you know, just cleaning yesterday the sidewalk there where he had been sick and throwing up and just, you know, spraying that around with a pressure washer, you know? I mean, it's just amazing to see what they're doing and what they're not doing.
And as David mentioned, this is a tweet from WFAA, and that was, again, the same news organization that provided us with a picture of the pressure washer cleaners hosing down the Ebola sick wearing no protective gear whatsoever. A tweet out of reporter Sebastian Robertson, breaking: Dallas company to install five remote temperature monitors to five schools with potential Ebola exposure. So, David, we know that this Ebola victim had contact with numerous children. There was concern about that several days ago. What does it tell us now that these five schools are installing remote temperature monitors in the Dallas area?
Well, it's been a day late and a dollar short from the very beginning, hasn't it? I mean, they're not getting up to speed nearly quickly enough. They're not being precautious enough. They're coming into this with an attitude that everything is under control. We're professionals. We know everything. They're trying to protect their jobs. These bureaucrats need to understand that if this pandemic gets out of hand, they're going to die along with the rest of us. They're not going to have their pass into the underground bunker with Obama. I think Chris Matthews kind of realized that the other day when he said, wait a minute, Obama promised this wasn't going to happen. And that was just a couple of weeks ago when he was at the CDC. It's a very unusual step for a president to go to the CDC in the first place. But you know, this is the sort of thing that they need to take precautions on. They were talking about what happened in the kind of an hour-by-hour breakdown of what had happened. This is a Washington Post story where they interviewed one of the people that's in his family. And she was talking about how she's actually the daughter of the person that he was living with. And she said that she went down to Walmart, bought him a blanket, brought it back, and she said she knew, because her family and friends are from Liberia, she knew how it started, that it starts with, and this is very important, listen to this, it starts with muscle pain and red eyes, as well as fever. So when she saw all three of these things present, she pretty much knew that he had Ebola, and she was the one who contacted the ambulance again. He didn't want to go because they had just sent him away essentially with some antibiotics. In other words, take a couple aspirins and, you know, call us in the morning, that type of thing. But she was the one who contacted the crews, and her children were some of the children that came in direct contact with him.
We're going to cover this and more after the break. We're going to dip into some geopolitical news as well as the UN's latest attempt to control the internet. Going to go to your calls, 1-800-259-9231. I'm Paul Joseph Watson. David Knight also in studio. This is The Alex Jones Show live, Infowars.com. Stay tuned.
Right.
rallying patriots worldwide in defense of human liberty. It's Alex Jones.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction.
We're back on the Alex Jones Show live, David Knight in studio. I'm your host, Paul Joseph Watson. Alex will be back on Sunday. We've got breaking news up on Infowars.com. Report Liberians flood airport attempting to flee Ebola-struck country. This is an article by Kit Daniels. Liberians are apparently flooding Roberts International Airport in Harbel, Liberia, in an attempt to flee the Ebola-struck country, raising fears that more people infected with Ebola will fly into America. Elsewhere in this article, they talk about the visas being processed for Nigerians also going through the roof, skyrocketing. So it appears that this trend of Ebola tourism, which we talked about earlier, could indeed be coming to the fore. And, you know, if these Africans realize that they can get treatment in America, whereas in comparison, in places like Liberia, people are literally dying on the streets, they're stumbling to get into hospitals, which are completely overwhelmed, then it is an incentive to try and get to America to get proper medical treatment. Of course, earlier we covered the story out of Breitbart, where the co-worker of the Ebola victim said that he admitted he had basically flew to America as part of a desperate attempt to survive. There you see the headline. So this individual went to America, by the looks of it, deliberately, according to his comments, to get treatment as, David Knight, an Ebola tourist.
You know, Paul, the part of what the media is selling in terms of telling people that we have some cure here called ZMapp, that's part of the fallacy that's going to be driving this. If by some chance he recovers, that's going to add even more impetus to it. And it was just yesterday that we had that doctor put on a full biohazard suit and go through the airports that, with written on it, the CDC is lying. And one of the things he said is, as this builds in these countries, there's going to be a lot of pressure for those people to leave those countries en masse and to go somewhere else where they believe that they will get better quality care. They're projecting, again, 500,000 to 1.5 million people, the CDC is projecting, in Liberia and Sierra Leone by January will have Ebola. That's about 5 to 15% of the population in those two countries. Once it gets to that point, they're already to the point where the government has essentially broken down in most areas there, at least in Liberia. So these people are desperate to get out of there. They're being granted visas with no conditions. We can't have any quarantine conditions put on there. They're just allowing these people to come. This is political correctness to the most absurd extreme. When we see the director of the CDC saying that the right of return is more important than preventing the disease from spreading, I mean, what in the world is he talking about with this new right, this right of return? Since when has the American government ever been concerned about our rights when we're traveling? I mean, whether you're traveling by plane or by car or even crossing a border, they've maintained for the longest period of time that you essentially have no rights, that they're going to do anything that they wish to you. And yet we've got something called a right of return that trumps everything. What is this guy talking about? You have any idea? I don't have any idea what he's talking about.
It just doesn't seem credible, does it, that the feds are suddenly really careful and caring about our rights in the face of this potential Ebola outbreak. Whether they're trying to dampen down the hysteria by not blocking the flights remains to be seen, but their very incompetence and inaction has only created more hysteria. We're going to go to some of your calls now on the subject of Ebola. Mike in Maryland, you're on the air. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. And I tell you, that Syrian lady, she's one courageous person here. I wanted to bring, it's an honor to talk on your show, by the way. I wanted to bring something to your attention. This is from the Frederick News Post, dated October 1st. Frederick, you know, is the home of Fort Detrick, Maryland. Might remind the listeners here. The title of the article from the local paper is Federal Decision to Bring Ebola Patient to Airport. And the article goes on to say that the decision to fly an American physician into Frederick out of the heart of the Ebola outbreak was made with little input from local officials. The State Department decided Sunday to fly the physician from Sierra Leone versus the guy from Dallas that came from Liberia. So he's from Sierra Leone. to Frederick Municipal Airport. The doctor's identity is not known, but the person was exposed to the Ebola virus while volunteering for an aid organization. The National Institutes of Health has not yet confirmed or denied if the physician has contracted the deadly disease, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The virus has taken more than 3,000 lives in West Africa. The city has been working on a memorandum of understanding with NIH and Fort Detrick regarding procedures when the city airport is used to transport patients. Frederick Mayor Mandy McClement said, I can go on if you like.
We've got the article up. I've got it up. Local officials had one day notice before doctor exposed to Ebola flown to Frederick. So again, David, you know,
it's interesting that they'd fly him into that location where Fort Detrick is, because that's where they work on bioweapons. And there's been a lot of talk about the involvement of the U.S. military. Of course, the U.S. military is deeply involved with this ZMAP vaccine, which apparently doesn't look to be necessarily effective. It was given along with blood transfusions, and it's not clear that the two people who recovered recovered from the blood transfusion, or did they recover from the ZMAP vaccine? They were given both of those things on the same day. And so it's not clear. In both of those cases, both the ZMAP vaccine comes with antibodies. In other words, it's not giving you a version of the virus that your body then reacts to and creates antibodies. No, they're injecting you with what they call plantibodies, because these are genetically modified organisms, antibodies that supposedly of Ebola that were grown in plants. But when he got the blood transfusion of an Ebola survivor, he was also getting antibodies from that guy's blood. So in both cases, he was getting antibodies. There were subsequently other people that were given ZMAP who then died. So it's not clear that that is a cure. But just talking about all this fear-mongering that's going on, that everybody's saying there's fear-mongering, there's panic about this. Look at the fear-mongering that goes on just a couple of weeks ago about global warming. People were marching by the thousands in streets of various countries and protesting, saying something needs to be done about global warming. Look, nobody has died from global warming. It's not something that can even be measured, according to most scientists. It looks like that's a trend that they're now saying it's a pause in global warming. Well, it didn't happen. They measured an increase in CO2, but their models that predicted a subsequent increase with temperature, that hasn't happened either. And yet, we have a real hockey stick here. You know, Al Gore is pushing the hockey stick that Michael Mann created, saying this is the end of the world. We do have a hockey stick going on with this pandemic in these countries, and people don't understand what to be afraid about and what not to be afraid about. They don't understand how to assess the risks, and that's what's really concerning me, is trying to get this information out, what people need to be concerned about, what the real threats are here.
Sanger in Texas, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for having me. Just touching on the subject of Ebola and what Alex has been talking about lately about internet censorship. Right now on Instagram, if you try and type in natural seed, it's called Garcinia Cola. If you try and type it in on Instagram, they won't allow you to actually post it. And certain friends of mine have actually had themselves logged out of their account and their password changed. And it happened to me as well. And so I just wanted to inform you and the listeners as well that there is censorship right now of our internet, and there is something that can stop the spread of Ebola that they're not letting us be aware of.
So you're saying that Instagram is censoring images related to Ebola or information?
Yes, if you try and post a comment, and I just tried to tag Barack Obama's official Instagram on it and send it to him, and Instagram will have a notification that comes up and it says that it goes against their policy and for the protection of users, and if you have a problem, you can either try and contact them or just dismiss it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Do you think they ever censored a picture of a lonely polar bear sitting on an iceberg? Do you think they ever censored
that? I would think that that would be okay.
Yeah.
George in California, you're on the air. Go ahead. George, go ahead. You're on the air. George is not there. Bob in Rhode Island, you're on the air. Go ahead. Do we have Bob? Dr. Gill on the line.
Do we have Dr. Gill?
Yes,
is this the doctor that was in Atlanta protesting the CDC's lying?
That is correct.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
What questions might you have? And thank you for giving me this opportunity to get the word out that Ebola is coming to America and the CDC has been sugarcoating it, or they're terribly derelict in duty and not predicting it.
So, Dr. Gill, obviously you hit the headlines yesterday. We have an article, Doctor protests CDC by showing up at Atlanta Airport in hazmat gear. CDC is lying. What was the first example of CDC incompetence in the aftermath of this Ebola outbreak that really raised your suspicions to the fact that they might be being dishonest about this situation?
It's happened the last few months. Any practitioner can connect the dots. There are a million people on the continent of Africa that are quarantined. 10,000 people leave West Africa a day. It's a matter of time before every third world country is seeded with this terribly deadly disease. They also share infrastructure of health that is in shambles, poor sanitation and distrust of the government. Every country to the south of us. And once it becomes endemic in third world countries, as it will in Africa, we will be importing these cases on an hourly basis. Sure, we can tamp down this. We can stomp this Ebola out in Dallas. I have no question at all this cluster we're going to take care of. But what happened? It's already outstretched the ability of the Texas Health Department to respond. They're flying people from the CDC. But what happens when a dozen of these pop up? The CDC still doesn't have it. They say if another one shows up, it's when another shows up.
So let's play the video, if we have it, of the doctor at the airport yesterday. You showed up with obviously the hazmat suit on. CDC is lying. What was the reaction you received from the TSA officials, the other airport officials there at the airport in Atlanta yesterday?
TSA was most cordial. I had met with them the day before. I'd flown from Guatemala through international concourse and customs integration. Mind you, no thermal scanning is going on despite what the CDC told USA Today yesterday.
Yes.
But the reaction from Delta, I also warned them the day before, but it didn't make it up the chain of command. I was able to get all the way to the gate. I did take off the garb for the security, of course, but I did make it all the way to the gate and took off everything. I put it in a satchel, carried it onto the plane. I was ready to go. They were ready to close the door, and the Delta officials stormed the plane, jerked me off, took my bags, and said, "We want the gear. We need to confiscate the gear. You're not flying." It was a little bump in the road at the end, but, you know, by the time I sat down that plane before that, I just breathed a great sigh of relief, saying, thank God we got the message started. The American Constitution Journal, they were out there just filming everything and photographing everything because I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to have a don't tase me, bro moment.
Yeah.
Thank God for that. We started this going viral, and the conversation has begun.
Well, that's very important. Thank you for doing that. And it's that type of event that gets people's attention. So it really was necessary for you to do it in that manner, I think, to get people to listen.
I've been trying to figure out for months how to get the public's attention. We've known these clusters were coming. We had meetings months ago in the Greene County Medical Society, yet Obama came out 2 weeks ago, the very same week it was misdiagnosed in Dallas because our alert was down because the Obama and Freedom from the CDC says a very, very small chance. We knew that is either a lie and they're incompetent.
Yes, yes. What would you like to see happen? What would you suggest that the CDC do?
I wish we could close the borders, but we've been dragging our feet to the south. I wish we could close the borders and make every person coming into the United States have a three-week isolation period. You know, we're not going to stop this until we catch every single case. And maybe this means thermal scanning everywhere. I don't know. But I tell you what we do need to do. Need to get people with fevers out of the hospital now, mm-hmm. because it's showing up, it's going person to person in the United States, and the flu season's coming, and we're not going to be able to tell the difference in the flu. By the way, get your flu shot, because you don't want to wind up in quarantine because you have a fever. Get your flu shot, but we don't want to have people showing up to the ERs and coming in contact with the staff, and then all of a sudden we lose that shift. And then somebody else shows up, we lose that shift. The PRN workers get scared and they quit. Next thing we know, we're without healthcare workers. We must remove Ebola from the hospitals. The hospitals are saying they're prepared. I would ask every listener to call their hospital, call their director of nursing, ask how many spare negative pressure rooms you have. Negative pressure removes the aerosolized hemorrhagic vomit coughing from the atmosphere, filters it, puts it outside the hospital rather than circulating it to the patient next door. Ask them how many spare negative pressure rooms they have, which is absolutely essential. And they'll probably say zero. We have to work every time we get a level 4 isolation or something like that.
Yeah, I would disagree with you about the flu shot. We've seen a lot of people who come down with a flu after getting the flu, and there's other issues involved with that as well. But could you address for a moment what you think about the way this was handled in terms of the cleanup of the sidewalk, the way they sent guys out there without any protective clothing, pressure washing that days after they knew about this, and then it was yesterday they did that, and then today they're just now getting around to cleaning the apartment. Could you address that?
We flew this doctor from West Africa a month ago, and 55 gallons sat outside Emory University Hospital for over a week with the medical waste, wondering what we're going to do with it. You know, they need to be proactive, not crossing this bridge after the fact. Same thing with this family in Dallas. They sat for 3 days in an apartment with blood, urine, feces-soaked mattresses and carpet while the CDC goes, what are we going to do about this now? They should have been proactive, instituted policy, procedures, and implemented them months ago. They've been derelict in their duty. And I point my finger squarely at Frieden and say, it's you, sir, dereliction of duty. Get the ball rolling.
Well, there's still a conflict in terms of transporting this. The CDC is saying that it's okay to what was holding up. They say the cleanup of this apartment was, number one, finding a contractor who wanted to do the job. Number
and
two,
every
finding...
municipality should work on that contractor right now.
Yes.
Our municipality should be calling the trash in Springfield, Missouri right now, should be calling the trash compact companies and say, who's going to remove our infectious waste? This stuff should have been done months ago, not after we need it.
And the transportation agencies are the ones who are putting the blocks on transporting this stuff on the highway, whereas the CDC says just go with it. That's fine. We're not concerned about that. Now, and at Emory, they had some industrial autoclaves that they eventually brought on site to get rid of the medical waste. Is that correct?
I understand there was several days of intense negotiation with waste management companies, and they worked out something. I don't know the details.
Well, you're right. They need to be proactive on this. But instead, what we've seen is them reacting several days after these things occur, letting children continue to go to school, allowing people to walk across the sidewalk where this patient was violently vomiting days before.
Sterilizing the vomit with a power washer? Oh, my God.
Yes, yes.
Could the news every day not get any worse? I understand there's a suspected Ebola patient in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yes.
We'll be back with more from Dr. Gil Mobley after the break. He was the doctor who staged the anti-CDC protest at Atlanta Airport yesterday. Final segment of the Alex Jones Show live coming up. Stay tuned. Infowars.com. Keep it locked in.
I hear the train coming. It's rolling around the bend. And I ain't seen the sun.
Final segment of the Alex Jones Show on this Friday edition live. Again, very important to keep a healthy immune system. InfoWarsLife.com has the new stock of Silver Bullet. Many of you have been waiting for this to come back in stock. Concentrated to a powerful 30 parts per million, triple the strength of many other colloidal silver products. And it's free of GMOs, gluten, additives, which you will find in a lot of the other products on the market. That Silver Bullet, available exclusively at InfoWarsLife.com, just back in stock. Now we're talking to Dr. Gil Mobley, who yesterday hit the headlines for his anti-CDC protest, saying that the CDC is asleep at the wheel with this Ebola outbreak. Dr. Mobley, now we're getting reports out of Liberia that people are flooding the airports there trying to get into the United States for treatment. We had comments from one of the co-workers of the Ebola victim in Dallas who said that he had entered America in a, quote, desperate attempt to survive. Do you think we're going to see a wave of Ebola tourism in light of this incident?
Well, yes, we will, and I'll mind you and mention to you that I came through International Customs returning from a medical mission trip in Guatemala just Wednesday evening, not day before yesterday, and despite what USA Today said on the front page yesterday that we're doing thermal screening at airports, we are not at Hartsfield International Airport, the busiest airport in the world. No one asked where I was. No one asked if I'd been sick. No one asked if I had a fever, and there was no thermal scanning. The CDC is asleep at the wheel, and there have been dereliction of duty, and I point my finger squarely at Dr. Frieden and say, dereliction of duty, sir. Get rolling.
It seems to be a pretty pervasive ignorance, because this article that we have up on InfoWars.com about sheriff's office officers are fearful after being ordered into the apartment where this Ebola patient was staying in Dallas. The amazing thing to me is not only did they order these five deputies to go there, but they were joined by a doctor and the head of the Dallas County Health and Human Services Department. I just don't understand. Is it because the CDC is telling people not to worry about any of this?
You know, they need to do whatever they can to avoid panic. Panic will just, but not lie or sugarcoat, but panic will cause irrational actions. We need to have frank, honest talk. Right now, either they're just omitting it or they're just lying, the fact that these clusters are going to overwhelm our capacity to handle them.
Yeah, but clearly there's the head of the Health and Human Services Department and a doctor who are accompanying these officers in the apartment that had not been cleaned. It had bedding, it had blankets that had been in direct contact with this patient who had been vomiting, had severe diarrhea, all these symptoms where he's losing bodily fluid. It's in the apartment, they haven't cleaned it, and yet these people don't seem to be aware of the threat that poses to them.
And why is this? It's because the CDC has been asleep at the wheel. We should have had policies, procedures implemented long ago. This epidemic has been ravaging West Africa for a half a year. And mm-hmm. we're just now scratching our heads, wondering, what do we do about this blood-soaked mattress? What do we do about the 55-gallon containers outside Emory? We're past due.
Yes. Okay, that's going to wrap it up for our guest, Dr. Gil Mobley. We'll continue to track your protests against the CDC. Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for helping us get the word out, sir.
Thank you. That's going to wrap it up for the show today. Alex Jones, of course, will be back on Sunday. Thanks for David Knight joining me in studio. Latest Ebola news is breaking at Infowars.com, of course, throughout the day. And again, get the products, Infowarsstore.com, Infowarslife.com for all the great health products. In these toxic times, the best thing to do is to keep your immune system boosted, performing at full capacity. I've been your host, Paul Joseph Watson. Again, Alex will be back on Sunday, and we'll be back for the Monday show live. Infowars.com is where you'll get all the breaking news on Ebola.